Man, it has been that time. That time is nearly done. But we got a lot more to do in this last hour here on 104.5 The Zone. Big Money Lucas, he is here. I am here with you until 1 o'clock. This show has been all over the place today. We haven't even touched on any of the poll questions. We have been fielding calls from all of our friends across sports. It has been a little bit of an emotional day for me. I have been very, very scared of this show today because my voice was crapping out on me last night during the A to Z Sports primetime show. But so far, so good. So here's to not, hopefully, me not botching it over the course of the next hour. Remember that we will have our regularly scheduled Mock Draft Monday segment. Ben Standig of The Athletic is coming up next. But in the meantime, there has been movement on the Jadeveon Clowney watch front, Clowney watch part deux, as it were. The Tennessee Titans not mentioned anywhere in this particular reporting, according to Josina Anderson. A meeting between Jadeveon Clowney and the Browns may happen this week, but it won't happen on Monday, as was previously reported. There was something said that the Browns were trying to set up a second meeting. They have met with Clowney already once this offseason. Apparently, according to Josina, travel issues kept young Clowney from making the follow-up visit. Now, I don't know. There could very well have been a legitimate travel issue, so I don't want to speak from a place of ignorance. And in fact, I'll pull up Josina's report so I can see exactly what it is she said. But all, like, when this came across my desk, here's what Josina is saying. So let me get the context before I rip Jadeveon Clowney. My understanding is there was a travel issue on the Browns' arranged second visit / physical. That second part is very important. I add parenthetically the physical. With free agent edge rusher Jadeveon Clowney for Monday. Was expected to arrive late Sunday. There's hope to finalize a new booking soon, potentially midweek at this time, per sources. All right. So, I mean, the Clowney watch is never ending. The Clowney watch, it's like the Night Watch in Game of Thrones. You're just there until the end of time. You die a Night Watchman. So it seems that we, even in Tennessee, even as Clowney is not being discussed at all for the Tennessee Titans or among the Tennessee Titans, I mean, he was discussed a little bit by the Tennessee Titans, but not enough to really give it substantial thought. We'll see how long this plays out and if they find themselves back in it, God help us. But at this point, the Cleveland Browns are the biggest suitor for Clowney. But here's the thing that makes it interesting. The Colts are monitoring the situation. The Colts have not spent any money this offseason. In fact, they were so unwilling to spend money because they are, as it is, you know, as is their custom, they don't overspend. They really don't spend in the offseason. They find the money to pay their players, and they build through the draft. They're a cash-to-cap team. So the Colts, even as they had quality players that were due contracts, Danico Autry being one of them, thank you very much, Indianapolis, if you're a Tennessee Titans fan, that's a good player to add. Now we find ourselves where the Colts could potentially be in the money, or in the running, depending on what the money looks like, for Jadeveon Clowney. Now what he's asking for is ridiculous. The reports are as high as $14 million for a dude who played 8 games last year and finished on IR, again with knee problems. Now, whether they, you know, how healthy the knees are, how interested Clowney is in a 1-year deal to end up getting paid again, but at $12.75, you got nowhere close to the value that you were supposed to get out of Jadeveon Clowney. The idea that $14 million would even be mentioned, even if the number doesn't end up being, you know, more than 10, it's outrageous to me. 615-737-1045. Have we taken any callers today, Lucas? My head is spinning. This show has been insane. Other than guests, no. So if you want to jump in on the conversation, we are open for the first time today. 615-737-1045. Do you think the Titans should be in on Clowney? Do you think they should continue, like the Indianapolis Colts are doing, to monitor the situation? If you're cool to let him walk to Cleveland and be there opposite Myles Garrett, remember they also signed Tack McKinley, who was an Atlanta Falcons cast-off, in free agency this year, but they are still looking to bolster their depth in a way that they no longer have with Olivier Vernon not on the roster. Myles Garrett is obviously a superstar, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL to date. Jadeveon Clowney would make the Cleveland Browns much more dangerous, provided health. We do not know what the health of the player is, and neither does Cleveland, because he missed his visit. Now, whether he missed his visit, you know, I don't want to be too hard on Clowney because I don't know the details of what the travel complications were, or as Josina is stating, I don't know why that's so hard for me, stating a travel issue on the Browns' arranged second visit / physical. 615-737-1045 is how you jump in on the conversation. Do you think the Titans should still entertain this? Because I think that the money, whether it's realistic or whether it's unrealistic, for the Titans, it's largely unrealistic. Like, if you're going to remember, Ryan Kerrigan's still out there. Justin Houston's still out there. Melvin Ingram still out there, or did he sign with the Chiefs? I feel like I saw that. Lucas, if you could fact check me here in a second. But there are still, remember what Will Compton says every time he joins us on Wednesday. Dennis Kelly spoke to this too last week. Free agency's just kind of weird right now. If you're a veteran player being jettisoned on a substantial contract, or if you're a veteran player seeking employment, teams are basically done until the draft, and then after the draft, they will make their considerations.
Yeah, Melvin Ingram is still a free agent.
Okay, Melvin Ingram still available out on the open market. There are other players as well, but those are the three, the veterans, Kerrigan, Houston, and Ingram, that make the most sense if the Titans were to add an additional pass rusher in free agency. 615-737-1045. It is 12:10, and we are taking our first caller of the day. I feel like I have done a disservice to the people, but Brian in Smyrna is here up first on 104.5 The Zone. What's up, Brian?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going great.
Quick question. Well, a couple questions. Of the free agents the Titans still need, or positions the Titans still need out there, what's the likelihood that they'll re-sign or sign somebody before the draft? And if possible, do you think they'll even look at maybe bringing Jarrell Casey back in to help out on the offensive line now that Dennis Kelly's gone?
Did he say offensive line? Brian, Jarrell.
Sorry, defensive line.
Okay.
Sorry.
just
it's been a rough Monday.
That's all right, buddy. Happy Monday. Keep plugging. We believe in you, bud. so, like, they will consider, and they will look by, like, B.J. Gooden is a linebacker who had a visit with the Tennessee Titans last week. I believe Field Yates reported that. And so they will continue to consider, like, bottom of the roster options, depth pieces, their special teams core very, very much needs additions at this point, because they had, as we mentioned, 20 unrestricted free agents that hit the market this offseason. Several of them have been signed, but several of them remain not signed. Jarrell Casey off the table. If they're going to bring back anybody, it damn sure better be Daquan Jones. Daquan Jones is still out there. Daquan Jones is a good player. Daquan Jones is a productive player. Not the kind of player, not the same kind of player that Denico Autry is, because remember, they've spent money on the interior defensive line, and I don't know if they would be willing to spend that same kind of money, because Daquan would probably cost somewhere in the same neighborhood of the 3-year, $21.5 million contract that Autry signed. But Jarrell Casey he's at the point in his career where his body was falling apart. He played 2 games for Denver last year.
It proved to be a good move by John Robinson. As much as Titans fans disliked the move at the time.
All right, so the best thing that John Robinson did last offseason was re-signing Ryan Tannehill. The second best thing that John Robinson did last offseason was re-signing Derrick Henry. And then the third best thing was getting Jarrell Casey the hell out of here for picks. There was zero reason that anybody should have taken advantage, and Robinson probably caught John Elway with 1 foot out the door. Obviously, the Broncos have a new general manager this year, but John Elway took on Jarrell Casey's contract, $13 million plus, with, like, if I recall correctly, like 3 years remaining on that deal.
And he played well in that season opener in Denver.
Oh, yeah.
Against the Titans, but that was it.
He's swatting passes, and then his body fell apart. His body was falling apart when he was with the Tennessee Titans. He played through a lot of stuff to find themselves in the 2019 AFC title game. No thank you on Jarrell Casey. Very important, the impact that Jarrell Casey had on that franchise and on the Middle Tennessee community, without question. Jarrell and his family have done so much for Middle Tennessee. And we are all, as you know, I consider myself a Middle Tennessean, even if I'm not a native.
Even though you pronounced it Smyrna, it's Smyrna.
Whatever. Damn it. I was doing so good. What did I say to bother people last week? The Mid-State? Dolly World?
Yeah, Dolly World will get you in trouble.
How many?
Dolly World and Smyrna will get you in trouble around here.
Smyrna. I'm sorry. We love you, Smyrna. 615-737-1045. Forgive me. I can't say that I've ever been to Smyrna, Tennessee. I have not. So maybe I shouldn't consider myself a Middle Tennessean if I'm saying Smyrna, Dolly World, and what else did I botch? Mid-State.
The Mid-State thing is fine.
People say Mid-State.
There's no issues with that.
Many, many people are saying this. Many, many people. I feel like people still say Smyrna, too, but I feel like most of them are not from Tennessee. But anyway, thank you, Jarrell Casey. No thank you on re-signing with the Tennessee Titans. What we will talk about, though, is not re-signing. As the Tennessee Titans continue their roster construction, what we will talk about is the draft, because the draft is rapidly approaching in just under 3 weeks at this point. And what we will do, as is our custom, every Monday is our mock draft Monday edition, this time with the Athletics Ben Standing. I'm Buck Rising, and this is 104.5 The Zone. It is a mock draft Monday here on 104.5 The Zone, not live from Smyrna, Tennessee. Smyrna, Tennessee, all up in my mentions right now. I'm so sorry. I feel like we really should do the geography bee of Tennessee, of places in Tennessee for me to botch. Maybe that's a summer feature. Shout out V-Love for low-key producing this radio show. Not better than Lucas. Lucas does a great job. But who Lucas has brought to the table today is Ben Standing of The Athletic for our Mock Draft Monday segment. Ben, we appreciate the time. Make sure, by the way, that you check out The Athletic. Well worth your subscription. I am a subscriber for all of the great content that we get here locally and nationally. Fantastic journalism and fantastic mock drafts being provided at theathletic.com. All right, so, Ben, hope your Monday's going well. Lucas was in my ear, my producer Lucas, in my ear during the commercial break saying, you know, I have a question for Ben. I want to know. He has to sell me on Kadarius Toney. So he suggested that we book you. I'm a fan of your work, but also now he wants a piece of you to defend your selection. So, Lucas, go ahead. You want to start the interview? This is the place that we find ourselves in. Go get him.
Ben, hey, listen, I don't want to come in hot here.
No, coward. Wait. This is like when you would not take a position on the Nashville Predators, and now you sounded much stronger during the commercial break than you did
First of all, I was validated by my position on the Nashville Predators. And second of all, look, Ben, I just want you to convince us why Kadarius Toney can be more than a gadget player in the NFL. What makes him a complete receiver that Titans fans should trust to be a number two guy to A.J. Brown?
I don't necessarily know that he is a complete wide receiver, but I think we're seeing in the NFL these days a lot more of these gadget guys have bigger roles. I think back in the day, a gadget guy was like, well, he's only going to be on the field for a handful of plays. And now, you know, we're seeing, you know, whether it's like a Deebo Samuel in San Francisco, I guess it's not fair to call Tyreek Hill a gadget guy, but I mean, you know, he wouldn't have been a guy that 20 years ago we would have said is like a wide receiver in the real, some of the traditional ways. And you're just seeing more and more players like this really become more staple. Like in the second round of this draft, there are a ton of guys who are going to go off the board. It looks like we're like in the 5'8", 5'9", range, but they all run like in, you know, like the wind, and they're not like a receiver, but the teams want these guys on the field. And the way one team put it to me was, it's not even so much that the front offices want these guys, but the owners want these guys.
Yes.
Because they're incredibly exciting and all that. I will say, and I think what I said was in that mock draft, Toney was the pick, but that the ideal pick was Tevin Jenkins, I want to say. Like, I don't necessarily know that. I mean, Tennessee had great success taking an actual wide receiver in the second round, and maybe they fall back into that pattern. But I don't know. Tony's got to go somewhere in the first round in my head.
and that seemed like a decent fit, but I don't know. Maybe I got to rethink this.
No, I did. Well, only because Lucas was attacking you during the commercial break. Again, cowardice by him to come to the microphone so tepidly now that we have you on the air. By the way, you can follow Ben Standig at Ben Standig on the socials. So Tevin Jenkins as the ideal pick. This is why I like your mock draft in particular, because you assign a pick but then give the ideal pick. Now, we all know what happened here with the Isaiah Wilson saga, brief and sad though it may have been. They find themselves in a position where the offensive line, for the first time in quite some time, Ben, is a question. This has been the strength of the Tennessee Titans. They at one point boasted the best unit in the league when DeMarco Murray was coming out of the backfield for them, and largely they have kept that group afloat with draft picks and guys like Dennis Kelly, who was just recently released. But now they have a hole at right tackle. Why is Tevin Jenkins an ideal pick for the kind of offense that we think under Todd Downing, formerly Arthur Smith, they are going to keep running here?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'll be honest. Like, I look at it like, when in doubt, like if I have a decision to make between a couple of different positions, I think offensive line I tend to default to, and I honestly tend to default away from receiver. There's a dirty secret with mock draft for people like me. You kind of have in your head who are the 32 players who are going to go in the first round, and then you have to figure out, find homes for them. So, like I said, that was sort of the game with Tony on some level, though I do think, you know, there's an argument to be made that it makes some sense. For Jenkins, but it feels like there's like a top four offensive lineman group in this class, and then whoever the fifth or sixth is sort of up for interpretation. He's going to be one of those players. It sounds like teams are viewing him primarily as a right tackle, though, so that's going to keep him out of the, you know, out of the reach of, say, teams like maybe the Colts are picking at 21, who need a left tackle. Now, maybe the Colts view this differently, but from what I've been told, he's being viewed more on the right side. So, you know, he's a pretty ferocious guy, and there's some legitimate upside there. So he's another guy going somewhere in round one. And, you know, like I said, for me personally, I just build on the offensive line or the defensive line whenever possible. And it just felt like, to me, if he's there, it would make a lot of sense. And there's still other couple players who I think could make sense for the Titans. But like I said, offensive line for me, and just what you hear about him and where he kind of fits on the board, seems like a good fit.
There's a handful of positions that the Titans need to address, and largely my position has been, if you can find somebody to trade up to 22 and you trade out of the first round, I think it makes a lot more sense than kind of sticking and picking unless there is somebody who you did not expect to fall to you, like a Caleb Farley, for example, who is going to probably see his stock and has seen his stock fall a little bit, largely through no fault of his own. But at this point, where when you look at this edge rushing class, these pass rushers that are not necessarily top tier by most NFL draft standards, but a name that I'm interested in or at least curious about is Gregory Rousseau. Now, in your mock draft, you have him going to the Cleveland Browns at 26. The reports are coming out today that They had a follow-up visit with Jadeveon Clowney. That is no longer happening because Clowney had some kind of travel issue. And so these things are delayed, as we have all experienced the Clowney watch scenario that just never seems to end. Rousseau is somebody who doesn't necessarily, just based on people who I've interacted with, and I wonder if your experience has been the same, Ben, that NFL people don't necessarily seem terribly excited about him, that he is the second Miami pass rusher in this draft class and second by quite a wide margin to Jalen Phillips.
I think that's the correct read based on the things that I have heard as well. You know, it's not like last year where Chase Young goes the second pick in the draft and it was like, yeah, this, you have to take this defensive end. It doesn't feel like there's anybody like that in this class, and it's possible there's not any pass rusher picked until the second half of the first round. And then from there, you know, depending on, you know, who you listen to, you know, you could be Jalen Phillips, who's the other Miami pass rusher that you reference, or Quiddy Pay from Michigan. Rousseau fits in there somewhere, but it doesn't feel like he's got a ton of wind behind him right now. He opted out last year, which does not make him unique in this class, and it's not going to hurt some players to look like, say, like a Penei Sewell from the Oregon tackle, or Jamar Chase, the LSU wide receiver. Both of them seem like they're pretty locked into the top 10 despite opting out. But Rousseau, it feels like teams are, upon second and third review, kind of wish his skills were more refined. And since he didn't have the year on the field to do it, I think there's some question about kind of where he's at. But yeah, there's a handful of defensive ends. And if, you know, look, that's a position that's going to go off the board high in general in terms of the overall draft, because it's such an important position. But it doesn't feel like there's anybody in the first round that teams are like, we have to get him. And yeah, Rousseau, I agree with you. It doesn't feel like he has a ton of momentum in his direction right now.
Well, certainly the Tennessee Titans are not in the have not been in the position, at least in the last calendar year, to pass on anybody who could potentially sniff a quarterback, given how anemic the pass rush was here last year in Nashville. Kind of jumping around with your mock draft, at eight, you have the Carolina Panthers currently sit at eight. The pick for them is Trey Lance, the quarterback out of North Dakota State. Now, I should preface this by saying that this mock draft was put together prior to the Sam Darnold trade. But as I look at this, Ben, and as I consider the position that Carolina is in, and how much of an anomaly Trey Lance is, I don't know necessarily that we'll see a situation for a guy who has played as few snaps, or the tape is so limited on him, but he's still going to go in the top 10. I don't know if this is the first time that it's happened. It may very well be the last time that it happens, given all the unknowns in this draft. But would it make sense to you for them to still move forward with a quarterback as their selection, understanding that Bridgewater and Sam Darnold are still both on the roster?
Right. So, yeah, I mean, for like Bridgewater, we can kind of move on in our head. Either they're going to, you know, he's either the second guy, or they're going to figure out a way to get rid of him. But they just made the trade to get Sam Darnold, who's a young quarterback. They gave up, you know, a second round pick next year, plus a couple other selections. So it's a decent investment. Plus, they're going to have to pick up his fifth year option, and then, you know, pretty soon have to decide whether they're going to want to give him a longer term deal. So, you know, look, there's a school of thought that says you take as many shots as you can at the most important position. And I think there is a chance that they would take a quarterback at eight, depending on, obviously, you know, the board and all that. That said, boy, it just seems like that would be kind of crazy. If you're going to invest in Sam Darnold like they just did, to then immediately put up a quarterback, to put a quarterback controversy potential in the mix. Like, even if you say Trey Lance is the pick and we're telling you flat out he's not playing next year or this year, and maybe not even next year, that's not how these things work, right? If Darnold starts off slow, or the Panthers are, you know, have a losing record earlier in the season, you know, there will be call for Trey Lance. So to me, you know, I would like to help Sam Darnold by either drafting, say, one of the top offensive linemen. That to me could make a lot of sense. There's also a cornerback situation in need there, but yeah, I don't think it's out of question. This has been a wild off season for quarterbacks, and we know the Panthers have been very aggressive looking for one. They couldn't get Deshaun Watson, so maybe they decide that going for the volume play is the way to go. I don't know if I would agree with that, but I don't think it's inconceivable that they could still do that.
Ben Standig of The Athletic is here with us on a Mock Draft Monday. Make sure you're following him at Ben Standig on the socials. Help me understand why Trey Lance is above Justin Fields in any conversation, because it just, I understand that the mock draft is slightly dated, but I cannot comprehend what the hell is going on with Justin Fields, other than people just completely forgot about the playoff run he just had.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I think this happens in a lot of aspects of life, where when we have something that we have seen over and over again, no matter what it is, you start how good or how much you like it, you start to see the flaws as you see it over and over again. Whereas something that's new and shiny, you don't notice. You only notice what's sort of fun about it, but you don't necessarily, you haven't taken the detailed examination yet. So Justin Fields has played, you know, in the spotlight for Ohio State for multiple seasons, right? Trey Lance, he played one game this year, and the games he did play the previous year were at North Dakota State. That's about as off the radar as you can get, you know, relatively speaking. And I think there's something probably to be said for that. There's more unknown with him, which works in his benefit, whereas Justin Fields has been picked over so much, I think people are looking at maybe the negatives more. Now, that said, I've heard a lot of evaluators praise Lance's potential. He's just such an incredibly odd evaluation because of the level and the lack of play. And Justin Fields, you know, I think there was a point where he might have been challenging Trevor Lawrence to be the number one pick of the draft, but during the regular season, he had some, you know, suspect games during the year, and you know, whatever, we can discuss why that happened. It doesn't even matter when you're talking about the NFL. But I think he gave, I guess, teams enough reason to question him. But look, all that said, he could go fourth to Atlanta, right? I mean, everybody's just trying to project. It just takes one team to change it. Now, all of a sudden, he's not falling, and Trey Lance is the one who goes later. But it feels like right now there's a little more momentum behind Lance than Fields, but I don't think it's like some like major issue, some major problem for him.
By the way, terrible oversight by me not mentioning Ben's podcast, Standing Room Only. It's exceptionally named, and I should have given it many more plugs just for the sake of the name of the podcast, but he's got a new episode out with Evan Silva. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review wherever it is that you find your podcast. For Atlanta at four, the situation with Matt Ryan is fascinating, especially given who, by most, I won't say consensus, but by many, many evaluators, Kyle Pitts is being regarded as the most talented player in this class that also has five potential first-round quarterbacks. Matt Ryan complicates this situation, though, because if you think that Matt Ryan, and they seem to think something of Matt Ryan, otherwise they wouldn't have extended him, and Arthur Smith has, of course, done work with quarterbacks who most people feel satisfied moving on from, Ryan Tannehill being the best example, does it make more sense to add to the offense that Atlanta currently has been, or does it make sense to think about the future with the quarterbacks? Because how rare is it for Atlanta or any team to find themselves organically in the top five?
Yeah, it's a fascinating decision because on the one hand, you think to yourself, right, Matt Ryan, look, you know, it's been a couple years now removed since he won MVP and was in the Super Bowl, but, you know, he's still, I think, considered to be a pretty good quarterback. And, you know, with good health, with a different coaching staff, you know, it's reasonable to think Atlanta could be back in the mix for a wild card berth or what have you, maybe even more now that Drew Brees is, gone in New Orleans. So that would make sense to then take it. You said Kyle Pitts, I think that would be the pick for me if, you know, based on what we assume is going to happen in the first three picks, what would make sense for me. But Atlanta's in a unique spot. They obviously don't want to be picking in this situation again, picking top five. There's going to be at least, I presume, one quarterback that they find interesting. So if you take this player for your future, you know, stash him, you know, that's a good spot. And here's the thing where I think it gets even more interesting. You know, there are some teams, like say like the Chicago Bears and maybe the New York Giants, who have general managers who can't wait for the future. They need a good year now to keep their jobs, it appears. Atlanta, they just hired everybody new. New GM, new coach. Those people, I mean, yes, of course, it's the NFL. There's no planning for too far down the line. But realistically, they should be looking at 2 and 3 years down the road, not just this season, which is why having a Justin Fields could make a lot, or Trey Lance could make a lot of sense, because Matt Ryan will be, you know, he's already, you know, what, 35, 36? He's going to be getting up there. And, yeah, we're in this era where Tom Brady is great into his 40s. But nonetheless, doesn't it make sense for a longer-term play if you're going to be there for a few years to get the younger quarterback? So I really think it's fascinating. It's not often I'm, like, torn on what to do with these things, but I really think it's a 50-50 call for me as to what I would do.
Ben, I feel like I've asked our Mock Draft Monday guests this each and every Monday since this Mac Jones hype has begun. Is Kyle Shanahan trolling us, or are they actually going to take Mac Jones third overall?
it's crazy. I think Mac Jones has clearly put himself into the first round discussion. And even before this trade, you know, it felt like he was going to go somewhere in the top 15, if not the top 10. But going, you know, if in fact it's the move at three, that is a pretty wild scenario. Here's the analogy I've sort of come up with, and hopefully I can make this sense for your audience. Here in Washington in recent years, when Jay Gruden was the head coach, Colt McCoy was the guy that Jay Gruden always loved. Even though Colt McCoy had never proven to be more than just a journeyman, you know, stopgap.
More than Colt McCoy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, but Jay Gruden always seemed to want to get him into the starting lineup. Colt McCoy, I think, would have been their starter in 2019 if he hadn't gotten hurt in training camp, and they ended up going with Case Keenum and then Dwayne Haskins and whatever. But anyway, the reason why Jay Gruden constantly went with Colt McCoy was he has, in his system, in his head, he's got an offensive system. And he doesn't necessarily need the best talent out there, but he needs the vessel to that he can put his system into that will carry out the plan on the field. And he knows Colt McCoy would do that because of the way the guy was an intelligent player and understood what Jay Gruden wanted. And part of me thinks, with Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, that this may be the same thing, that he knows that maybe a guy like Lance or Fields is maybe more talented, but those guys, part of that talent is a lot of off-script stuff. And Kyle Shanahan seems like a pretty confident person, we'll say, when it comes to coaching. And, you know, he's obviously had some tremendous success, that perhaps he wants somebody who he knows will execute the plan. And Mac Jones might be the guy who fits that the best, which is why maybe if he goes that way, he's taking perhaps the lesser talent, but a better fit for what he thinks he wants to do. That's at least one thought I have as to maybe why this would happen.
That's, you know, I just want to think more of Kyle Shanahan than that he can't change his plan to adapt to a better talent. But, you know, these are semantics, and this is why I'm not in the position to make these decisions. Ben Standig has been our guest of The Athletic. Make sure you're subscribed to The Athletic. Well worth your time and your money while we are ramping up through the pre-draft process. And of course, the Standing Room Only podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever it is that you get your podcast. Ben, it was a lot of fun. Thanks for doing it.
Hey, I really appreciate you guys having me on. Hopefully next mock draft, I won't have any controversial picks at 22.
It's okay. You'll just have to talk my producer into bringing you back with the next pick that you make, but it's all right. We understand that these things are fluid. Ben Standing, our guest here on 104.5 The Zone. All right. Oh, the show has been, I'm honestly disoriented. But what does not disorient me, the one thing that keeps me moving forward, is the polls, is Lucas Panzeca. That is his job. And by the way, the Nashville Predators have just put out on their own social media account a trade alert. We'll tell you what that is coming up next. I'm Buck Rising, and this is 104.5 The Zone. That's what's going on here until 1 o'clock, because, of course, Blaine and Mickey will continue the live and local coverage here on 104.5 The Zone. Buck Rising with you until then. Now, in the meantime, we have breaking news. The Nashville Predators, from their own official Twitter account, trade alert with the siren emojis. Preds social media manager will trade a broken stick for a venti iced coffee, light ice, one pump of sugar-free vanilla, and a splash of half and half. Breaking news here on 104.5 The Zone. Liam Neeson, do we think that the Preds social media manager is funny?
No.
Yeah, me neither. Liam Neeson, do we feel, actually, Bruce Drennan, do we feel that the Preds social media manager is pretty bored today?
Oh, yeah. You're an idiot.
No. Yeah. I mean, maybe I don't think I'm an idiot, Bruce.
You don't know anything. You don't know squat, you stupid idiot.
Are you talking to me? You're talking to the Preds social media manager. I don't know. I don't know who we are directing Bruce Drennan's ire at, but I love that we have both Bruce Drennan and Liam Neeson as characters on this show. Yeah. So the Preds bored today. I don't think there's anything's going to happen, anything substantial. Otherwise, they wouldn't be screwing around on the team Twitter account. That's, you know, my personal opinion. But what is not opinion, what is straight facts, are the polls that we put up each and every day. At Buck Rising is where you can vote on the polls. There are several. Because this show has been so hectic, my head is spinning. There are many topics put up in the polls that we did not even address. But the person whose responsibility said polls are is Lucas Panzeca.
How much attention will you pay to Tennessee State football with Eddie George as head coach? A lot, a little, none at all. 53% are right in the middle saying a little. 37% say none at all. 10% say a lot.
Here's the question that I would ask the 10%. What's Deion Sanders' record at Jackson State right now? Can anybody tell me? Does anybody know?
I don't have a clue.
4-3.
And right. You said that earlier.
And I know that only because I looked it up.
Like, you said it earlier, and I already forgot.
Now, I understand that we are not, you know, Jackson State is not local to Nashville and that Deion Sanders has no significance to Nashville, so we're doing this with a Nashville sample size, I understand. But what I would say to you is that the fad or the I don't want to call it a fad because I think it's a legitimately good idea. We talked to Howard Gentry. By the way, if you missed any of the many interviews that we did today, you can check out the podcast, Buck Rising on 104.5 The Zone. Well worth your time. I would just say that there's a lot. By the way, Deion Sanders has spoken about Eddie George potentially being hired at Tennessee State, calling it a phenomenal move. So we have Deion's thoughts on the matter. All I will say to you is temper your expectations, because while it is exciting and it is a big deal and it is a smart move, I don't know how much it's going to shift the needle in terms of day-to-day viewership.
Howard did remind us, not on air but off the air, that last time Tennessee State went the Jackson State route, so to speak, it was hiring John Merritt from Jackson State, who in turn became the greatest coach in TSU history, a College Football Hall of Famer.
Yes. And that is something that I wish we had more time to. Howard is a fantastic guest. I hope we can bring him back again soon. That man has a wealth of knowledge that goes far beyond the realm of just TSU athletics, given how long he spent here in Middle Tennessee.
Is the only news the MLB makes terrible officiating decisions? 73% say yes, 27% say no. Probably many Braves fans in that mix with last night's game in mind.
Well, yeah, because we didn't get an opportunity to rip the MLB today for the replay review that they botched and they ended up upholding, which is so stupid. If you know you got the call wrong, change the call. Like, it's the only time. Drugs and bad calls are the only time that baseball makes the national news.
And insane contract numbers like Fernando Tatis.
Yeah, that's something else, because baseball still has no salary cap. But yeah, we didn't really talk about today the controversial lost replay challenge that the Braves had in the ninth inning last night. Bang bang play. Alex, is it Boehm or Bame? Anyway, slid home. Eventual winning run. Braves catcher attempted to apply the tag, moving from the third base side of the plate to the first base side, where Boehm or Bame, whatever his name is, was coming in. And the replay showed that he never touched the plate, or at least according to the Braves fans. What else do we have?
How closely did you follow the final round of the Masters yesterday? Very closely, casually, or did not watch? 40% of about 300 voters did not watch. 29% watched very closely. 31% watched it casually.
So the majority didn't watch. This is the problem. Golf doesn't have star power. Tiger Woods cannot be the thing that's still carrying your sport, especially when he's named. The biggest story of golf last week wasn't the start of the Masters. It was Tiger and the latest updates on his car wreck and whether Tiger's going to be able to play golf again, because golf needs Tiger desperately. I mean, I had hockey, baseball, and golf on at very, and I watched a little bit of the Grizz Pacers game yesterday because I have rooting interest in both of those things. But not a lot of people paying close attention, unless like us, you're paid to.
There also hasn't been a good photo finish, so to speak, in the Masters in a very long time.
Oh, Matsuyama was very much in control yesterday. Like the guy that looks like he's from Happy Gilmore threatened him a little bit.
Yeah.
But outside of that, it was really, you know, it was not terribly competitive.
Also, his caddy bowing to the course as they walked off the 18th hole, one of the coolest things I have seen in a long time.
That was incredible. It was honestly, you know, there's a lot of emotions, especially given, you know, everything that sports has been through in the past calendar year plus. But yes, to see that tradition and to see the first Japanese man to win a major in pro golf was very exceptional, especially given the fact that that is going to catapult him into billionaire status because of international endorsements.
There's also a photo circulating of him today in the Chicago airport, just hanging out in a terminal with his green jacket just draped over the seat next to him, just scrolling around on his phone.
I mean, wouldn't you? I'm blanking on the Cowboys receiver's name, Michael Irvin. Michael Irvin saying after he got his Hall of Fame jacket, he basically, you know, he made love to his wife in it. That's what Michael Irvin did. So, you know, wear it as much as you want. You earned it.
Is there a feud between J. Martin Ramon and Buck? 66% say yes, 34% say no.
Yeah, we will rehash this tomorrow because they voted me the official tool. Because, you know, politics is dumb. and apparently on the state legislature today is the awarding or the assigning of a state tool, which I believe is the latter.
The latter.
We don't got anything better to do in Tennessee politics than award or assign a state tool.
It was a good dig by Schaaf, though.
It's a great dig by him, but also it makes me very, very upset about what the legislative agenda is.
Are the Preds Stanley Cup contenders? 78% say no, 22% say yes.
That also bothers me because I'm going to have to eat it when the Preds end up making the playoffs and then have a miraculous ride to the Stanley Cup. What is miraculous is Blaine and Mickey. They are coming up next. We'll talk to you on Tuesday.